berry, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 84 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes at thebeardedvegans.com. And you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will talk about what we've been eating, go over the news, and conclude with an in-depth discussion on the National Animal Rights Day ceremonies that took place this past weekend. Alternate title to the episode, What's This NARD Business About?
Really the most unfortunate of acronyms, Paul.
The NARD. Isn't that the bad guy in the Domino's campaign?
I don't know.
What's the... Oh, the Noid. That's what I'm thinking. Avoid the Nard. All right. Yes, Andy? What were you going to say?
I was going to say, before we do that, I have a little announcement to make.
Oh.
And that is that I will be speaking at the New Jersey Veg Fest on October 8th.
Ooh.
It is a 2-day event, but I'll be speaking on the second day, October 8th. And, you know, I don't really pursue speaking engagements all that often, but I was asked to do this, and I was pretty excited to be talking about this at a Veg Fest. I almost never see this as a topic at Veg Fest. And so I'm going to be part of a panel. The other panelists are JL Fields and Ginny Messina, who I both look up to a lot, and they have a lot of great things to say. Ginny was most recently one of the three authors of Even Vegans Die, which I just got in the mail and I can't wait to dig into.
Nice.
But the panel is going to be called The Herbivore in the Room, How Body Shaming and Food Shaming Alienate Vegans and Pregans. So it's going to be all about body shaming and fat shaming and food shaming and, you know, like anti-oil and all this stuff, how these things potentially harm the vegan movement and prevent our ability to grow into a larger audience. So really excited for that. We will announce that as we get closer to the date, but it was just confirmed recently. So I'm letting y'all know right now so you can put it on your calendar.
I just looked at my calendar and I will try to make that. And I will be in the audience looking out for Penn Jillette, seeing if he's going to try to do any sort of magical disruptions of this anti-oil or pro-oil discussion.
I picture him like shooting popcorn out of like a t-shirt cannon or something.
Or out of his sleeves. So, Andy, what have you been eating?
Well, I got to go to the Cleveland Veg Fest this past weekend, and it's been going for a couple of years, but I've never been able to make it. And I'd heard from other friends that were vendors there that it is a really good fest with like a ton of people, a lot of really good food. So I was excited to make it there. And as usual, I was kind of stuck behind the table for most of it, but I did get to try a most delicious croissant from Metro Croissants. And I don't know why. This is just something, a food item that is not super common in the vegan world yet. So it's always exciting when I see one, and they pulled it off flawlessly. And then the other food item that I got to eat while at the fest was from Bamboo Garden. And they had, it was kind of a large cup, and it was like a delicious savory food parfait almost. The bottom was these kind of spicy, garlicky noodles. And then there was a layer of what seemed kind of like gobi manchurian, but maybe a little more mashed up. And then sitting on top of that was a couple of cubes of some very gingery tofu. And I was in heaven. It was delicious. And yeah, all the food vendors were selling out left and right. By the time it slowed down at our table to go walk around and find food, there was like only a handful that had food left. So I was happy to grab that croissant in the morning before any of the attendees came in. And can't wait to do it again. And the other place that I got to eat while I was in Cleveland that I thought was pretty dang good was Cleveland Vegan. They really nailed the name. And we went for brunch, and it was one of those things where you could pick like three items to make your dish. And of the three, the one that I thought was the most outstanding was their French toast, which was made with challah bread, which is not a super common vegan item again. And one of my favorite types of bread pre-vegan. And
I know.
Came with like some berries and bananas on there too. So it was very delicious. There's a picture of that up on our Instagram right now that you can go look at.
I'm super jealous because a family friend used to make challah bread and like homemade and bring it over and again, in my pre-vegan days, I enjoyed that, and it's so good. And I don't think I've had it ever, being vegan.
Yeah. Side note to Andy, while I edit this, use Holla Back Girl as the outro music.
Nice.
And so while I was at the Veg Fest, I got to meet a number of fantastic beardos. I finally got to bestow some pins upon some returning beardos. So thank you very much to author Mark Hawthorne, Nathan, Jeff, Adam, Chandra, EA, Yurnea, and Amy. Actually, Paul, Amy brought by a copy of a book. Like, I handed Amy a pin. I was like, I have something for you. And Amy was like, I have something for you. And I was like, what an unexpected turn of events here. And Amy had brought me a copy of the Marshall Rosenberg original nonviolent communication book.
Whoa. That's awesome.
So awesome. So cool.
That's so cool.
A true listener. Amy interacts with us on Instagram a lot as well. So thank you very much for that, Amy. I cannot wait to dig into that and then further talk about it on the show.
Hell yeah.
And speaking of nonviolent communication, I got to meet Rama Ganesan at the Veg Fest.
Whoa.
So it all...
You didn't tell me that, Andy.
Surprising you, Paul. So that was really cool. Awesome. We had not met in person, despite having been interviewed on the show before. And also got to see friend of the show, Lauren Ornelas, who was the very first interview that we ever had on the show way back in episode 2. So it was a very fun fest to be at.
And who Andy... Andy and I saw speak at a vegan feminism conference at Wesleyan in my very early vegan days that Andy took me to.
Way back in the day, the old eco-feminist conference at Wesleyan. Yeah. That was, yeah. I forgot all about that, Paul.
Yep. That was before we were best buds.
I hate to think of such a time. Paul, did anything delicious go in your mouth this past week?
I ate 5 tofu pups for lunch today.
How much ketchup went on those tofu pups?
A little bit. A little bit of ketchup. A lot of mustard. I'm a mustard boy, Andy.
Mustard boy, Paul.
I also tried fennel heads and collard. I'd made fennel heads and collard greens, but I had never made fennel heads before. They're pretty good.
Well, I have to say, I appreciate your tofu pup hustle. I've been known to eat many a tofu pup in one sitting, but mostly because they're a delivery vehicle for ketchup.
And if you could, you would just, if it were socially acceptable, you would just put ketchup on a bun and just eat that.
No, I would actually fill up, you know, those like beer helmets with the straw that goes down to your mouth. I would just fill those up with ketchup.
Nice.
And sit there sucking on it. But because it would be gross to just do that, I would alternate it with bites of French fries.
Amazing.
Paul, let me tell you about a less than pleasant food experience I had this past weekend.
Uh-oh.
Went to a place in Cleveland called Zeshuan Garden, and they are kind of in the vein of Chinapan in that they have their non-vegan menu, and they have a separate, what they call Zen menu, which is everything on the Zen menu is vegan.
You mean the Zen Mew?
Paul. So we ordered a couple of dishes to split off of this menu. They had hot and sour soup, which is something that usually has egg in it and, you know, nice hot egg, kind of gross in a soup format. They had the vegan version of that, which was awesome. They had those Mewa chicken drumsticks with the little bamboo skewers. That was really cool. And then we got this dish that was kind of like sweet and sour chicken, as in that it was, you know, the chicken was breaded and then tossed in like a sweet and sour kind of sauce, something mm-hmm. of that nature. So we were both eating this dish, and I took a bite and chewed and tasted it and swallowed, and I was like, wow, that was so realistic. That was really good. And then I was thinking, it seemed like a little too realistic from a place that seems to be using Mewa.
Yeah.
So the next piece, I like cut it in half with my knife and fork, and I was like, that is 100% not vegan.
No.
Like, I could just tell there was like dark meat in it, and I was like, I have tasted vegan meats far and wide. I have never seen one that changed like color like that and kind of flaked apart like tendony like that.
Oh,
Paul.
And then you ate the rest of the dish before you said, excuse me, I think this isn't vegan.
You know, I've had moments when I've like accidentally eaten some cheese and you're like, oh, that sucks, but live and learn. But there's something about accidentally eating the actual flesh of an animal that just makes you feel horrible.
Yeah.
And knowing that, like, this piece of another creature is down in my belly right now. And so we had both eaten some of it. And so then we called the waiter over and we're like, we're pretty sure this isn't vegan. And the waiter kept insisting that it was.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that vegan that just, like, hassles the waiter and all that stuff. But, like, we were positive. We both, my dining partner had been vegan for longer than I have. And, like, we knew what's up. We're like, this is not vegan. And eventually he was like, okay, I'll take it back to the kitchen and check it out. And he did. And he came back to us and said, I'm sorry, that was actually pork that was in that dish.
That sucks.
Yeah. You know, it's just like one of those things where, like, you want to be cool. Like, we weren't, like, mean. We weren't like, how dare you? Like, I know some people might, but it's still like, just, you feel so defeated. So anyway, I'm a brand new vegan, Paul.
How many days vegan have you been?
I've only been vegan for 5 days now. The clock has been reset.
You have one in your van. You have one of those, like, the last time there was, like, the safety accident count.
I mean, would you have done the same thing, Paul? Would you have had them remake the dish for you?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have. I think, like you, I wouldn't have gotten angry at them. I maybe would have gotten a little frustrated, but I don't think I would have taken it out on them. I think I would have gotten frustrated by the if the person, like, kept insisting, like you said, that it was real or that it was vegan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I would have acted similarly. That just sucks.
Yeah. It's just like, and then, you know, kind of then for the rest of the night, you're just like, I hate that animal.
Yeah. Did they, like, you know, did they give it even to you for free at least?
No discounts.
Those bastards.
Yeah. But I will say, actually, I forgot to write this down. To make up for it, we then went to this place called Mitchell's Ice Cream.
Yeah.
And they have two ice creams there that are vegan. And it was like hopping. It was like, you know, a Friday or Saturday night. And I got this, like, salted pecan ice cream that was among the best ice cream I've ever had in my life.
Oh, nice.
It was incredible. It was like yogurt level flavor. Incredible.
Well, it started off good, Andy. It kind of went a little downhill, a little upturn at the end there with the ice cream. But hopefully next week is better for you. And hopefully this coming weekend, well, by the time this episode comes out, it will have already been passed, but I'll be attending the Vegan Street Fair New York edition, and hopefully I will have a lot of, hopefully I can safely say, put my bets on that it's all vegan food, and have some delicious stuff.
Well, actually, it's funny, Paul, because a few days after the Cleveland Veg Fest, the Cleveland Veg Fest made a post on their Facebook page saying that they had just learned that someone was serving non-vegan food at the fest.
Hey, Andy. I don't think there's anything funny about that.
Then why am I laughing?
What was it? Was it meat?
It was like an Indian place. So they had some paneer, which is cheese, and they had some kind of like yogurt drizzle. Yeah. And so about, I believe, half of the dishes they were serving were not vegan.
Were they like labeled, or were they just trying to pass it off as vegan?
Apparently, if people asked, they would say, yes, this is vegan, that's vegan. But, you know, the parameters of this veg fest, like most veg fests, is that everything was 100% vegan. So one of the main draws of these events is you can eat all this food and you don't have to ask if anything's vegan or not.
Yeah.
So people are just like, oh, wow, like vegan paneer. We have a friend that has made vegan paneer out of tofu before. So it's not like it's not like super weird that someone could do that.
Yeah.
But then, of course, all the comments were just people being like, oh, my God, I can't believe I ate non-vegan food at a veg fest of all places.
Yeah.
The irony of breaking veg at a veg fest, et cetera. So double check your sources if you can sneak away from the table, Paul.
I will. I definitely will. So let's move on into the follow-up section. Almost said the news, but we got a quick follow-up first.
So this is just a quick follow-up from episode 83. Last episode, we were talking about the video that was saying that Animal Advocate should start asking people just to stop eating chicken as opposed to go vegan. And one of the reasons given was that there's like this super high rate of recidivism within veganism. And they say that like 80 to 84% of people that go vegan actually end up going back. And we talked a little bit about how some of the studies they've been citing for why they think this approach is better were flawed and had these issues for a number of reasons. But we didn't actually really dig into this little piece of information. And it's something we've talked about on the show before. I think we kind of take it for granted. But Casey Taft, friend of the show, had written a post about it. And I just wanted to read a little section of that post because I think it puts it into perspective a lot better as well. So Casey Taft says, despite what you may hear, there is no evidence that 84% of vegans revert back to consuming animals. This is from a study by Faunalytics in which they grouped vegetarians and vegans together, and these groups were derived according to diet and not ethics. In other words, they didn't properly assess whether any of these people were actual vegans, and therefore the study tells us nothing about lapsed vegans. So I actually went and looked at this study, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And it's not like really a study. It's just kind of a questionnaire. And from everything that I've read about like people self-reporting their diets is that it's not super accurate. And then I was also reading a while ago an article about how a lot of people will say they're vegetarian when they're not actually vegetarian, or like they'll say they're vegetarian in this phone poll, but then when they're asked, you know, how many times a week do you eat chicken or fish or whatever, and they say, oh, like 2 times a week, you know. So it feels like I have no doubt that there's a lot of people that go vegan and then stop being vegan, but also my intuition is that the people that do it for ethical reasons and are like really into it, not just for like health, and obviously a lot of people can get into it because of health and then do it for ethical as a follow-up, but like my intuition is that it's probably a lot lower in terms of people that are ethical vegans.
Yeah.
You know, and so I guess the only reason why I bring it up and the reason why it kind of bothers me is because, you know, it's like they're switching approaches. Oh, you should do reducitarian, or you should just stop eating chicken, whatever it is, because there's this assumption that we've like horribly failed, and we don't really know if we have horribly failed or not. And so I think it's important to note that, because, you know, we're basing whole new approaches on this information, which may not be the most accurate.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have a feeling, like you were kind of alluding to, I have a feeling that like a lot of people that answered that questionnaire, maybe if they like one day they like watched a video and were like, I'm going vegan, and then tried it for one day and were like, this is too hard, and stopped. Like, I wonder if that is counted among, if on a survey they did put like, were you ever vegan? Yes, I was vegan. Even if it's like, if you're vegan for like, if you say you're vegan for like one day, I don't know if I'd count that as like a vegan reverting back to consuming animals.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think we need to examine these things closer before we see groups that are telling us we need to switch our approach. You know, and obviously, Paul, so much of our show is dedicated to refining our approach and like what kind of activism we think is good, bad, in the gray area, whatever it might be. And obviously, we're going to talk about that later on the show today. But I also think that we need to really examine these things, because often when they say there's a difference in, you know, what type of phrasing you use, and you see the difference is like a 1% difference, and you're like, okay, well, does that mean we have to abandon vegan messaging because like 1% more people thought it was maybe a little more effective to say, try eating less meat versus, hey, try going vegan or whatever it might be. So be skeptical out there. Be very skeptical.
Yeah.
Paul.
Yes, Andy?
I feel like we often have so much negative news on the show.
We do.
And I think you're about to change the tone of the show right now.
Oh. Well, I'm not changing the tone of the show. All these good people out there not eating as much meat are changing the tone of the show. So I got a few articles from Veg News. I'm going to lump two of them together. This first one is titled 70% of global population is dropping meat. And it's a pretty short article. I'm just going to read a little bit from it. It says, new research shows that consumers worldwide are both reducing their meat consumption and ditching it altogether in favor of plant-based alternatives. According to new research compiled by market insight company Global Data, 70% of the world population is ditching meat, either reducing intake or eschewing it altogether in favor of plant-based protein. This new data is consistent with last year's prediction by Allied Market Research that the global meat replacement market will reach $5.2 billion by 2020, with a compounded annual growth rate of 8.4%. So again, we just got done saying how we should be skeptical of data points, but hopefully these ones are correct. you know, hopefully that is accurate. 70% seems like a large amount. Obviously, it's not talking about 70% of people, a total of 70% people ditching meat, but it's saying people reducing meat, which is good. And to kind of tag that along with another positive story is another article from Veg News, Blueberry Farms Replacing Pigs on Prince Edward Island. And it's just basically talking about this little island in Canada that is kind of getting rid of pig animal farms and replacing them with like plant farms. So it says from 2000 to 2016, the worth of the pig industry fell by more than $20 million, while the soy and blueberry industries, both of which were worth a minuscule amount in 2000, are currently valued at $16 million and $8.8 million, respectively. According to local news outlet CBC Canada, the number of pig farmers on the island is currently only a few dozen, compared to hundreds that were in operation in 2008. So, good job, Prince Edward Island. Doing nice. Good.
And I guess we don't actually know if it's people that were farming pigs are switching to farming blueberries, but, you know, when we talk about, like, well, what are the farmers going to do? And it's like, we don't want to see them out of work. We just want to see them doing different work. So if this is, in fact, people that are switching from raising animals to raising plants or growing plants, that's definitely a super positive move.
Most definitely. Andy, do you have a little news story here, too?
Why, yes. Yes, I do, Paul. And this is something that has been a long time coming, but coming to us from the NewYorkTimes.com. New York Blood Center reaches a deal to help care for research chimps. So as someone who is frequently in New York and friends with lots of New York activists, I see updates on this campaign all the time. And basically, the New York Blood Center had been testing on chimps for hepatitis B vaccine. So this testing started in the 1970s, and it ended in 2006, and these chimpanzees are actually in Liberia, and the Blood Center was paying for their care up until 2015, and then they decided to just abandon these chimps, and the Humane Society kind of stepped in and was caring for them, but a bunch of activists got together and said, we don't think that that's right. We think that you've been, you know, the least you owe to these chimpanzees is to pay for their care. You know, and they can live for 50 to 60 years, so they could potentially have a long, fruitful life ahead of them. And so there was a large campaign. There's a lot of protests outside of New York Blood Center. There were some very heated exchanges that I've seen on video from some of these demonstrations. But from the New York Times article, 2 years after the New York Blood Center set off a storm of protest from animal welfare advocates by withdrawing support for a colony of chimpanzees used for biomedical research, the organization has joined with HSUS to guarantee their future care, pledging $6 million.
Good.
So apparently this is kind of about half of what will actually be needed to care for these animals.
Oh.
So they're kind of splitting it with HSUS, but it's something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't imagine sustained protests will get them to put in even more. But this almost seems like they're kind of like, we're so annoyed with you. Here's $6 million. Please leave us alone.
Yeah, and $6 million is better than $0. So
this is something. This is true. And I think that this is potentially a good example of a targeted single-issue disruption campaign that can yield success because there's a specific goal in mind when we talk about these issues of direct action-esque campaigns or more like agitation campaigns. You know, if you just have this vague goal versus something that's like, this is what we need you to do and then we'll leave, I think that this is a good example of how that type of campaign can be employed.
Were people protesting from 2015 till now?
Yeah.
It's a long time.
It's been a while. Yeah, I remember seeing this story and I was like, I don't remember how long I've seen people protesting, but it's been a very long time. So I guess, yeah, since 2015, two years.
It's nice to get some wins.
Okay, so yeah, another win, another good piece of news. And then Paul.
Speaking of wins, Andy.
Oh.
One final news article, again from Veg News, really killing it, Veg News, thank you. Vegan bodybuilders win 32 medals at 2017 Fit Games. Reading from that article, vegan nonprofit bodybuilding organization Plant Belt collectively won 32 medals during the 2017 Naturally Fit Games in Austin, Texas last Saturday. The games welcomed 1,000 total participants, 39 of whom included Plant Belt's entrants, who were challenged in various fitness events including kettlebell, powerlifting, bodybuilding, Olympic weightlifting, and CrossFit. In addition to winning 32 medals, 22 of which were first place, the vegan team's own Sarah Lee set both the world and American records for kettlebell. Plant Belt was founded by husband and wife team Danny Taylor and Giacomo Marquise in 2013 for the purpose of proving that consuming animal products is not necessary for building muscle. As long as the meat and potatoes crowd exists in the in strength-based sports, Marquise tells Veg News, we will continue to educate and dispel the myths that you need to eat meat to build muscle and strength. To date, more than 100 athletes from countries around the world, including Singapore, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Great Britain, and Germany, have competed with the Plant Belt team and have raised $20,000 to support vegan outreach organizations, nonprofits, and farmed animal sanctuaries. So major props to all those people. Danny and Giacomo are both great, great people. And I'm so stoked to see them doing so well and to see their organization that they made doing so well.
Yeah, that is awesome. I know that this whole Naturally Fit show was definitely a talking point for me when I was doing a lot of outreach on college campuses and talking to athletes and talking about how the vegan bodybuilders like really dominated this show, which I believe one of their hallmarks is that like people are like triple tested to make sure they're not using any kind of drugs and steroids and things of that nature. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like really the most pure test of these, you know, powerlifting, etc. So I think that is definitely a good thing. And, you know, it's like we talk about body positivity, we talk about fat positivity, and it's like, We want vegans of all shapes and sizes and physical capacities out there to represent for the people that are like them to aspire to. So I think that this is totally awesome. And I love what they're doing with Plant Build. I love that they're just raising money for farmed animal sanctuaries and organizations. I think that like great messaging across the board.
Yeah. And from what I've seen of anything that they post, anything that they talk about, because Danny and Giacomo have their own podcast, Muscles by Brussels. And anytime they've talked about this stuff, it's never been like what you might hear in a lot of these other like health vegan podcasts. From what I've heard, it's never been like fat shaming. It's never been, if you want to be vegan, you have to have this specific type of body. It's always been like very, very positive, which is great. And that, like, they'll post pictures of eating like donuts and stuff like that. But yeah, so from what I've seen, it's like their messaging has always been super duper positive. And like you said, Andy, it's important for our advocacy to be like, whatever body type you have, whatever body type you want to have, it's like you can be vegan and achieve that.
Yeah, I remember listening to the Muscles by Brussels podcast. I think they've kind of slowed down with the releasing of episodes. Yeah, they haven't released a ton in 2017, but they had episode 19, which was called Dear Fat People, and I was like, oh no, what's this going to be? But I remember it's been a minute since I listened to it. It came out 2 years ago, but I remember listening to it and being like, oh wow, this is so great. It's like very anti-fat shaming. I recently wrote a post on the internet that really took off and got like a ton of comments and shares about fat shaming, and Giacomo was actually one of the first people to comment in support of what I had written, and definitely is like a good advocate for those things as well. So yeah, props to Plant Belt team for advocating in a productive way.
Yeah. And like also because I think that the bodybuilding and fitness community in itself, like completely unrelated to veganism, has a lot of problems with those issues as well. So it's cool that they are both in the vegan community and in the fitness community promoting a more positive message.
Yeah, right on. So congratulations to everyone that competed and represented veganism.
Hell yeah. So with that, let's move on into our discussion of the night, Andy, or the day, or during your drive, whenever you're listening to this podcast. I'm not going to judge you when you listen to our podcast, but yeah, let's get into it, Andy. So what are we talking about?
What if they listen to it while they're sleeping, though?
Unacceptable.
So we're talking about National Animal Rights Day, which, as we've already said, has the very unfortunate acronym of NARD. This is an event that takes place on one day, and it's held in multiple cities, but it's all kind of the same in terms of what happens at it. And this is an event that I've seen a lot of animal activists participate in. It's held as, from my perspective, as kind of this very highly regarded event that people want to take part in, but I've never really heard anyone talk about it critically and kind of examine everything that's going on. It just happened this past weekend, so I wanted to talk about it, Paul. I've never participated. I've only seen the video footage that they put out afterwards. I've talked to people that have participated, so we'll be kind of basing our discussion off of those things. So for those that are unfamiliar with this event, I bet after we describe it, you'll say, oh, you know what? I have seen pictures of this. And you can find out all of this information at thenard.org. We'll put a link in the show notes. But according to their website, on this day, special NARD events are held simultaneously in major cities around the globe. They start with a memorial ceremony for the billions of animals who die every year by human hands, often in the presence of real deceased animals, and continue with the reading and signing of the Declaration of Animal Rights. They end with a celebration of the animals in our lives and the steps that are being made every year towards ending animal suffering and shifting the planet to a cruelty-free, plant-based lifestyle. So that's like on the very first page when you go to their website. If you dig in deeper into the why section, they have, you know, a whole, I believe, two paragraphs. If you go to the actual why section, there's about two paragraphs there detailing the suffering and exploitation that animals go through at the hands of humans. And then they end it by saying, the National Animal Rights Day was created to give a voice to these billions and billions of anonymous, nameless beings. On this day, we stop everything else and remember them. We mourn their loss, express their pain through ours, and reach out on their behalf to anyone who has a heart to listen. And when you see the photos of this, everyone is usually wearing kind of a, it's not like a biocontamination suit, but it's like a bodysuit that someone might wear if they were in like a chicken processing plant or something, so they didn't want to get any contamination in from the outside world. And then on top of that, they're wearing a shirt that says Our Planet Theirs Too, which is the name of the organization that currently puts all this thing on. So, yeah, so... So then the activists are standing there, and in most cases they're actually holding the carcasses of dead animals, and these range from, I've seen baby lobsters all the way up to actual deer. So it's like a wide variety of animals, and then they kind of stand there, and there's all these photos of everyone looking very sad and tearful, as any reasonable person would if they were standing there holding a dead animal. And they do have some speakers at one point, and they read off the Declaration of Animal Rights. And that's basically the gist of the whole thing. It's always held in a large public setting where the general public is walking by as well. And you can go to thenard.org and you'll see footage of what we're talking about to get a better idea. So, Paul,
mm-hmm.
Do you have any experience with National Animal Rights Day? Have you participated? And what is your perception of this event?
I have not participated, and I have like seen the pictures of it, because I think for a lot of people in the vegan community, like, you may have seen pictures of this in like some video or like, even if it was just like a quick clip from some other like animal advocacy video, but maybe not known that that's what this was, which was the case for me. Because when Andy said, like, Paul, are you familiar with the NARD? And I said, Andy, I don't think so. I don't think I would forget that name. And then Andy showed me, and I was like, oh, okay, I am familiar with the NARD. I also wish, side note, I also wish that they just, like, really embraced the NARD. And they said stuff like, on this day, special NARD events, called NARD events, are held simultaneously. Or later on, the Declaration of I wish instead of the Declaration, it was the Dec Nardation of Animal Rights. I don't know.
I think you're really pushing it, Paul.
I'm pushing the NARD. But
your love of puns has taken over your rational thinking.
It has. But when you see these, because it's either people holding actual animals or sometimes they're just holding pictures of animals in cages or pictures of animals suffering and stuff like that. It is very I couldn't imagine doing that without getting pretty emotional as well, which it seems like that's what that is the general reaction of a lot of people. As for my initial reaction, I think it does have the potential of being very powerful, because it's it's usually pretty large groups of people. This isn't just like two or three people standing here. It's like, I don't know, 30 to 50 people, I would say, standing, holding different animals. I think it has the potential to definitely affect onlookers. I would hope maybe there are, and I would assume there are there's some booth or something nearby where people can get information. I mean, I don't know if I should assume that that's what it is, but I would hope that there's somewhere, because it seems like all the activists or the people advocating for this are all just standing there silently. That's what it's in all the different videos. Everyone was completely silent. So it's just kind of, to put forward this is something that is very somber. This is something that is very sad. But I would hope, as I would assume that this affects some of the people that are walking by, that there's somewhere that they can go and maybe get more information about veganism or get more information about what they can do, the steps that they can take, which I do not know if that's what happens, but I think that would be a nice thing if that was what it is. What do you have any answer to that question, Andy?
I am not entirely sure how much emphasis is put on it. I know someone that has been there and has been on the periphery and was handing out literature to people that were passing by. But I'm unclear if that is a main objective of this event. You know, there are speakers talking about what's going on. And in that description that I read earlier, it said, for anyone that has a heart to listen. So I don't know how much actual takeaway literature there is for people, but I do think that is a good question to ask, is, who is this for, and is it effective if it is for whoever we think it might be for?
What do you think is the objective, Andy?
When I read their about section on the website, and the one that I, read back, it was created to give a voice to these billions of animals, stop everything else, remember them, mourn their loss. So the point is to give a voice to these animals, right? And it's held in a public place, and I don't think it would be held in a public place if it wasn't meant to have some impact on the general public that would be walking by mm-hmm. in that area, because otherwise, if the point was just to mourn the loss and express the pain, their pain through ours, as it says, I think that it would be something that's done in a more private setting.
Yeah.
If that was just the case, I think that, a farmed animal sanctuary would be a really great location for something like this to be held, or like a rented hall or someone's backyard or a field or whatever it might be. So there's some aspect of about this that is, theatrical and performative for those around us. And my guess would be that they want people passing by to see how much animal suffering affects us as human beings and hurts us and how sad we are for these animals, and hope that that will impress the seriousness of the issue at hand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's probably the main thrust of this demonstration, is to show, look how seriously we take animal rights. Look how seriously we take the death and suffering of these animals. We are mourning them as humans do. And that's a part of the Declaration of Animal Rights. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think that must be it.
And Andy, I don't necessarily think that that is the worst thing in the world. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad tactic to be like, hey, this is something because I think, I don't know, many people, non-vegans, have the perception of not taking vegans very seriously. And if this is an event that could be I was making fun of them, but now I see they are taking, this is something that they are absolutely serious about maybe I shouldn't joke about this, maybe I should consider what they're saying. I mean, if it has the potential of doing that, like, I could see it being a potentially positive thing.
Yeah, and actually, quick update, I did ask someone that has participated in previous years.
We got an update.
About if there was much emphasis on passing out literature and kind of reaching out to the people around, having conversation or whatever. And they said, I don't think any at all, but I didn't go the last 2 years. You know, and the person that I mentioned is passing out stuff. They were just kind of bringing it on their own accord. It wasn't like officially coordinated by the NARD. So, and you know, there's multiple that happen around the country. So this is only based off of, you know, one or two events that are happening. So it could be wildly different at others. It seems like the central tenet of holding the Dana animals and having the ceremony that seems to persist throughout, but who knows what kind of education aspect could be attached to other ones that I don't have that sweet insider info for.
So what do you, Andy, what do you think of my opinion that, like, getting non-vegans to understand, like, how serious that we take this and how much this affects us? Like, do you think that that's that could possibly be a positive, effective tactic?
Yes, I think that it is important to show that we do take it seriously. I think another question altogether is this the way to do that? I guess it's kind of like, it's like that line we have to walk as vegan advocates, is like, knowing when to joke around, knowing when to be serious, knowing when to be firm, knowing when to give a little bit. And so I think that, you know, if you let people walk all over you all the time in terms of this stuff, that's not productive for animals. And you want to be firm in this, but then you also don't want to be that person that just pushes and only talks about this issue. That's the only thing they ever talk about. And then no one takes them seriously anymore. And then they're just like, oh, it's that wacky vegan. And, like, this isn't really a big issue. So yeah. I guess we can, like, do you think, like, this event walks that line well?
I mean, there is part of me that feels, like, weird about people just holding dead animals, and especially, like, stroking them, like, petting them and stuff, which is what some people seem to be doing. I don't know. Part of me just, like, I don't know. You wouldn't see that with, like, a baby or something like that, a human baby. That would be a very strange thing if someone did that. So I kind of feel like it's strange to do it just because it's an animal. Like, I think I feel more comfortable when it's just people holding the pictures of animals, either, like, in factory farms or like, being slaughtered or something like that. I think that's, to me, I would rather see that. But I think, I don't know, I think it could be people walking by. I think it could. They would probably, if they're, you know, they, if you walk by a group of 50 people crying, I think you stop to see what's going on.
Yeah. And I think that whether or not these demonstrations are holding the dead animals really changes my perception of this event.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about this a little bit later on, but in the Declaration of Animal Rights, which is a huge part of this ceremony, one of the tenets, one of the declarations, is animals who have died must be treated with respect and dignity as humans are. And I feel like holding these animals on display, like, uncovered, we wouldn't do that for humans.
Yeah.
In any way, shape, or form. I know we have open casket funerals, but they're all dressed up and wearing suits. And, I mean, even those are kind of fucking weird, if I'm being honest, you know.
Tell them like it is, Andy.
I've never felt comfortable at an open casket funeral, but it just seems like a weird thing to kind of parade out this dead body. And I get it, it's part of the saying goodbye and grieving process, and, you know, obviously a lot of people don't opt for that, but I can't imagine any ceremony in which, like, human beings, and like you said, Paul, like, if it was like a dead baby, a human baby, there wouldn't be 50 people staying around holding these dead babies and, like, mourning them and crying and putting them on display for the public to make a political statement. Maybe someone could correct us. Maybe this has been done before. But in general, it feels like people would view that as being really disrespectful to the dead bodies.
I was going to say that exact same point, that that seems to very much go against, like, animals who have died must be treated with respect and dignity, because it's like, we don't parade our, like, for humans, it's like we don't parade their dead bodies around like open in the air. And that just seems, that would seem strange to me. So Andy, do you, cause you have this sick insider information, do you happen to know what the general public's perception is of these events? Because the videos focus really just on the people, the advocates. They don't really show the reaction. They do show that there is like some sort of crowd around these people, but they don't really go into what their reaction is. Do you have any information about that?
I do. So actually, while I was in Cleveland, a NARD event was held. I did not go because we were actually recording, Paul, and I like being a fly on the wall in these things. I probably would have gone otherwise, but a friend did go because they had to table for a group. I'm not going to name any names because I don't know if this will get this person in trouble, but they came back and reported that it was kind of awkward and that there was a lot of passerbys just kind of laughing at what was going on.
Oh, no.
And then also a friend at the New York event had kind of a similar story, and you know, the cops are nearby watching over and joking around about everything, and the tone of the crowd does not reflect the seriousness of the actual ceremony. And that is not to say that there wasn't plenty of people that walked by and, you know, were affected by it. I'm sure that could certainly be the case, but obviously if someone's standing there holding a dead animal and crying, and then someone walks by and they just laugh at it and they're like, oh, those wacky vegans, look at them, they're up to it again, those scoundrels. I guess that's one of the things that I'm like, are they walking that line effectively or not?
Yeah, that's a bummer, because that, to me, that seems like the point is to get people to understand like the seriousness of it all, you know?
And Paul, we've discussed this point many times, but the whole idea that veganism is not about vegans, do you feel like this event makes it about the vegans, or is it still important to show how serious this thing is?
See, I think it is a little bit, because again, I feel like the objective is to say like, look how serious this affects us. But at the same time, like, I think there could be a place for that if it really does get that message across. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about, there was, some disruption that was filmed, some DXE disruption, and the person, you know, walks into whatever the establishment was, and they're talking about some animal. I'm sorry, I'm so vague on the details, I'm kind of forgetting them right now, but they were crying during this thing and like very emotional, and it was like so emotional that people made fun of it instead of taking it as being really serious.
Oh, really? That stinks.
Whereas, you know, you feel like someone probably wouldn't do this about like a human that they lost in public, but you know, if someone was feeling that way about a human that they lost, their brother or whatever, people would probably have a lot of sympathy for them. They'd be like, oh, this person's having a meltdown and they're really affected by the passing of this loved one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the internet is a horrible and cruel place. I'm sure people would still make fun of it and turn it into a meme or something, but I have a gut feeling that it would be taken more seriously if it was about a human. So I worry that it's like, I don't know, it's hard. It's like, we're vulnerable. Like, you know, as you go vegan, you're kind of taking on the weight of all this pain and suffering, and you want to scream, and you're angry, and you're frustrated, and you're sad, and you're disillusioned with your loved ones, and you just want to shout it from the rooftops, but you have to hold it in. You have to be this calm, rational advocate all the time. And it's tough. Like, I feel for these advocates that, you know, I think a lot of people participate in this event because, one, I think it's just like a thing you do. I think this is like, oh, this, if you're vegan, you go do this thing. And I think people just participate. And then also, you know, a lot of this I do think is about us. And I say us as like the people participating as vegans. Like, it is a chance to mourn and to feel that sadness. And it's like a time to just be okay with being overwhelmed by the sadness. You know, like sometimes you just need to have a good cry, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it almost feels like this is that. It's like, hey, we're all going to get together and we're just going to cry it out right now. Obviously, not everyone's crying, but like, we're just going to feel the weight of how horrible the world is towards animals right now. I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But again, I question if that needs to get done in public.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I think the people that kind of organize this think that that does need to be done in public because, again, for the same reasons, like, then people are going to see how serious this is. So it's like, I think I get why they would do that. But I also see what you're saying, which is like, if you want to do that, that's perfectly fine. Just maybe not something so public. Do you think this is similar to the like the animal save, like pig save kind of demonstrations?
I don't know. In what way would you compare them?
Because it's kind of like, I mean, I guess in those cases, what it's the kind of attitude that they're putting forward is like, we're gonna let these animals have some comfort in like the at the end of their lives. But it is, I think it's kind of similar in that it's both cases are trying to show like that humans, like the seriousness of the situation and like how serious vegans feel about this and like just showing, trying to show compassion for these animals.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get that. I think that in that regard, it's a good comparison. I think that often the animal save events they're not happening really within massive public view.
Mm-hmm.
They're where slaughterhouses are, and that's usually not where a ton of people, a lot of foot traffic is happening.
Yeah.
And so the NARD events are a lot more theatrical and performative and designed to have an audience.
So do you think, because maybe these NARD events are not super effective at converting people to veganism, maybe they get, like, I'm sure some onlookers are affected, but even if it's not the best, you know, the best tool for animal advocacy, do you think it has negative impacts, Andy?
I don't know. I think that is a hard thing to quantify. I think that, you know, if it's just at its very least a thing for us, whoever participates, to feel those emotions, as I was saying before, and just, you know, even just kind of re-pledge your dedication to the movement. That's something I've talked about with, like, you know, the Animal Rights Conference, which is something that I think has tons of issues, but it is for certain people, like, the way that they recharge and, like, reconnect. And I'm like, okay, like, even if this thing isn't perfect, is that aspect of it enough to kind of overlook the flaws? You know, and flaws could be putting it lightly with some of the things we're talking about, but I don't know, Paul. I just don't know.
Because I think people that are going to, like, snicker and laugh, it's like, I think, you know, people that are going to laugh at people experiencing emotions, I mean, you're kind of just like an asshole at that point. And I don't necessarily think, not that I don't think that person is ever going to go vegan, but I don't necessarily think it's putting them further away from being vegan. I think it's just kind of showing that they're kind of being a dick, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think that it's pushing people further from veganism.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think there's a huge difference between holding pictures and holding actual animals. Holding pictures, you're just making an interesting visual display for people that are passing by. And holding animals, I think that is so far outside of the norm of society that does kind of paint, like, oh, those weird vegans, look what they're doing now.
What if they did that, like, outside of a butcher house or outside of a slaughterhouse or butcher house, outside of a butcher store or outside of, like, a slaughterhouse or something like that? And then it also, it wasn't just people holding dead animals in this random park in New York City. It was like, hey, this is what's going on in there. Like, this is the result of what's going on in there.
That would be interesting. I feel like that would probably be more effective, or people would make the connection more.
I think it would also be more confrontational, maybe. Especially,
yeah, perhaps.
If it was a smaller business where it's like the owner was there and would probably come out. But, Because this doesn't seem, from the video that I saw at least, it doesn't seem very confrontational because there's not much dialogue going on. Which I think it's good that it's not confrontational.
Yeah, yeah. I think that it's tough when you get a bunch of vegans to go up against a small business, because you might sort of lose your goodwill within that community if you're targeting like a small business that they cherish and love.
Yeah.
But I guess a slaughterhouse or a butcher shop would be a much more appropriate avenue to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But do you remember in Carnage, Paul? Like, that was one of the things that they showed. I forget what kind of light it was portrayed in, but the activists that were laying roses at butcher shops and holding funerals at butcher shops, that was something that they had in Carnage.
That's true. And didn't we talk about a recent story of people getting arrested for doing that too? Like putting flowers on meat?
There was like contamination issues.
But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about like what they're doing right now with the Nard, just at a different location. Not even in the location, just outside of the location. So that, because one of your criticisms was it just is so outside of like the norm that it's not effective. But if I think it's, if it also has the connection of like, yeah, this is something that's not normal, and this is what's going on like right behind us. So it's like that's the kind of imagery that they're trying to paint. I think that can potentially be effective. Again, there aren't many slaughterhouses in highly populated areas, so obviously you're not going to get that many passerbyers, but I don't know, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, like, New York City is a place that you could pull that off. Like, the Veggie Pride Parade starts in the Meatpacking District, and there's, like, a bunch of people, just random, you know, consumers walking around there. It's not just people looking for, you know, choice cuts of meat or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, again, that's something that you wouldn't be able to do everywhere, but could be something that gets done.
Yeah.
I am remembering one other thing that my friend at the New York one said. This person who had some literature they were handing out, is that people that were walking by were very unclear as to what the purpose and intention and message of the whole event was. And he talked to some people that thought it was about animals that were like killed by vehicles, like roadkill animals. Ooh. So, you know,
that's not good.
it's not good if you're not communicating a clear message.
Yeah. Yeah, get a big banner or something.
Yeah, like that is something that's pretty easily solved by two or three people holding a large banner that says "Go Vegan," you know, something like that. Something that puts the message out there.
Yeah,
and also I can't imagine how awkward it is to procure these animals.
That's what I was wondering too. Where are they getting these animals from?
So from animal agriculture facilities, from vets, from, you know, places of that nature. And apparently if it's like a place that you think would be friendly to the message, like a vet or something, they would just sort of tell them what it was actually for. But if it was from like a butcher shop or like a grocery store, they would just say that they're making a zombie movie.
Oh, that's so goofy.
Yeah, so weird and awkward. And then, yeah, I don't know about the logistics of, I believe they freeze the animals and then kind of take them out, and they're sort of thawing during the ceremony.
Ugh.
You know, so, yeah, I don't know about the logistics of transporting the animals, and it's kind of an awkward thing.
Yeah. So can we talk about the another interesting thing that's in the Declaration of Animal Rights, Andy?
Yeah, let's dive into the Declaration of Animal Rights, because apparently this gets read at every event, and so people can see the declaration. We'll put that in the show notes. Otherwise, it's just at declarationofar.org, and it kind of starts saying, since the dawn of humanity, there remains a group so persistently abused and marginalized and that their suffering is ingrained in our everyday lives, et cetera, et cetera. Considering that all living beings on this planet Earth originally came from the same source, considering that all living beings on planet Earth inhabit some land, sea, and air, considering that all living beings possess the same basic needs, blah, blah, blah. And then it goes on to say, we hereby proclaim that, and there's 9 points. So what points are popping out at you, Paul?
Well, can I say something before I bring out my points? And that's, sure. Like, when I was reading this, it was very, like, we're all one, we all come from the stars, like we're all made from the same Mother Earth. It was very unity-esque kind of attitude that I felt, and it was very much the attitude of like, oh, we're all the same, like a bee is the same as a horse is the same as a human, and it's like I don't think that like wins over a lot of people, and I personally don't necessarily agree with that anyways. Like I think that we can be different but still respect and not kill each other just because we're different. And it also at some point it says like all living things or like something like that. And I was like, are they including plants and trees and stuff into this also? So I don't know. I just wasn't a huge fan of that wording. I just don't think that that's going to be the type of attitude that wins over a lot of people. Like that will win over some groups of people, the hippie community. But I don't think trying to convince people that like an insect is like trying to convince people that they should value an insect in the same way that they value their children is going to be something that, I don't know, wins people over. But in terms of the actual points that they were making, the one that definitely stuck out to me the most was that number four, which was all animals have the right to eat, sleep, be physically and psychologically comfortable, be mobile, healthy, safe, and fulfill all their natural and essential needs. As such, all animals are to be free from hunger, thirst, and malnutrition, physical discomfort and exhaustion, confinement against their will, bad treatment, abusive or cruel actions, pain, injury, and disease, fear and distress, and free to express their normal patterns of behavior.
So why did that bother you, Paul?
Because I was like, does this mean that we need to like go out into the wild and make sure that animals aren't hungry, thirsty, malnutritioned? I don't know if that's how you say that. Like make sure that animals aren't killing other animals. It's just like a, like I totally get that if they're talking about like animals that we keep as companion animals. But if, I mean, they're definitely trying to, you know, get people to go vegan, so that would then abolish like farms and the agricultural industry. In their ideal world, that would, all that stuff wouldn't exist. So really that would just leave, and I'm assuming that would also get rid of like zoos and circuses and aquariums and stuff would not meet the standards of the other points. So like those probably wouldn't be in existence. So besides pets, are they then like the only type of animal that seems left would be like a wild animal? So are they talking about going out into the wild and creating like an artificial environment for them in which they are healthy and safe and free from pain and injury? Because that seems impossible. That does not seem like something that could actually be done to keep every animal safe.
Yeah, that one definitely seemed like an odd inclusion, because a lot of the other things I'm like, okay, I get why these would be here. You know, all beings are created equal and have a right to life. All animals have the same natural right to exist as any other living being. All animals have the right to be free to live their lives on their own terms as intended by nature. And that's the point that is right before, as intended by nature. But like, yeah, when we talk about a vegan world, I think for most of us, and actually, Paul, I think this could be a whole other show topic, but for like most of us, it's like we envision animals back in nature for the most part doing what happens in nature. And what happens in nature is none of the things that are in point four.
Yeah.
Like no one in nature, you know, nature is red of tooth and claw. No one has the right to sleep or eat or be physically and psychologically comfortable, safe, like. What happens out there is the opposite of safe, you know? Like,
yeah.
It reminds me of that like Mitch Hedberg joke that's like, if fish could scream, the ocean would be loud as shit. Like, you know, like it's not, you know, like I think when we talk about veganism, we're talking about ending humanity's involvement in the suffering of animals as much as possible.
Yeah.
And it does seem like yeah, in their vegan world, what animals are left? Because otherwise, it does just seem like a very welfarist statement.
And in fact, because you had just pointed out that point five, which is they have the right to live in their natural environment, does conflict with this point four, but even in point four, the very end says, and free to express their normal patterns of behavior. Most animals' normal patterns of behavior is to be really terrible to other animals.
Or to get eaten horribly.
Yeah. So it's like, I don't know. That one is kind of weird. And again, I get it if it just means the animals that we interact with, in terms of, you know, animals that we keep or that we're using. But again, if all these other points were followed, we wouldn't be using animals. So it's like, even, I don't know, that doesn't add up to me, Andy. Does not add up.
Well, point seven is humans shall do whatever is within their means to protect all animals. And all animals is all animals. I assume that's animals out in the wild. It says, it follows it up and says, any animal who is dependent on a human has the right to proper sustenance and care and shall not be neglected, abandoned, or killed. That makes sense. Totally makes sense. Like you're saying, that applies to companion animals. So that means like they're definitely differentiating between wild and companion animals, because they say protect all animals. And then here's a specific clause for companion animals.
Yeah. So I don't know. I imagine that. Oh, because also another thing about this declaration, they're trying to get 50,000 signatures and then send it to like big governments in different countries and to try to get them to do something about it. And right now, I think they have almost 10,000 signatures.
9,485.
Almost 10,000 signatures. I would wager a guess that most people who signed it aren't like actively like, you know, going into the wilderness and saving this squirrel from this owl. I don't know. Do squirrels eat owls, Andy? I'm assuming that. Squirrels do not eat owls. But you know what I mean? I'm sure most of those people aren't. Most of those people are probably like vegan, or even some of them probably vegetarian. So I don't know. That's kind of like, and the problem, again, I think the bigger issue is that if they do get these 50,000 signatures and they do send this to some big government organizations like the White House or something, the White House is going to read this and be like, no, this is literally ridiculous. We're not like making laws that require people to go out of their way to save wild animals. So I don't know. To me, that's, including that kind of stuff is hurting their legitimacy. Legitimacy, I can say that word.
Well, so much of this, perhaps all of it, is symbolic. You know, I feel like this is just kind of a symbolic gesture, again, to show how important and how seriously vegans are taking the rights of animals.
Yeah, I guess, but like, aren't they, you don't think they're not sending it to the White House and these, all these government organizations to hopefully get something to happen?
I'm sure that they would like to.
But why? I don't know. I don't think there would be, like, what's the point? I guess, what would be the point of it then if it's just symbolic? Sending it to, like, the White House.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, Andy?
That's a great question.
Because I guess they could like send it to the White House and then make a huge like social media buzz about it. But if you're just saying it to White House, like not that many people are going to read that. In fact, I'm sure very few people are going to read it and then throw it away, unfortunately.
I mean, yeah, considering who's in the White House right now, especially.
Yeah. But so I don't know. I wish that, because I'm not, you know, I'm not against petitions and stuff like that. I just wish it was a little more realistic, I guess. Realistic in terms of your ask. But again, I don't know. I don't think you could write, like, everyone has to go vegan and then send that to the White House and then really expect them to do something about that anyways. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I guess the logical conclusion would be, all slaughterhouses are shut down. It's illegal to kill any animal, eat any animal. You know, I assume that this also applies to, you know, there would be like criminal prosecution if someone hit a deer with their car.
Yeah. According to this Yeah, it seems like it. I just feel like the more maybe effective route would be, because I don't think right now, at least, there's not going to be any sweeping law that gets put into place that says everyone has to go vegan. But I'm sure you could find, if you are a smart vegan lawyer, you could maybe find ways to infiltrate the kind of policy and stuff at a smaller scale first. Is this welfare stuff, me, Andy?
Well, I guess I just think that in order for this to be effective, we need a much larger vegan population.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Like, you're not going to mandate a moral, you know, you're not going to mandate a moral code within people. Like, we saw how that worked out with prohibition. It did not work out at all.
Yeah.
So I think it's patently ridiculous. and you know, it's funny because, like, you know, I'll be like, I believe we will have a vegan world. I don't know. It probably won't happen in my lifetime. And who knows if the ice caps are going to melt and kill us all before it could actually happen. But, you know, when I'm like, eventually we'll have a vegan world, and people are like, that's not realistic. And I always say, not with that attitude, mister. You know, but, like, are we doing the same thing right now? Or we'd be like, this is not realistic. It's never going to happen.
I don't know. I'll tell you.
Because I feel like the legal route, like, the like political climate that one would need for this to become the legal route and, like, actually get put into law, it's hard to imagine that happening unless, like, 98% of the country was vegan.
Yeah. Essentially, we are talking about carnage, the world that is in carnage.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it, like, the morals of the public would most likely have to reflect what would become the law before it became a law.
And you know what? Carnage is only, what, 50 years in the future? So, Andy, maybe it will be in our lifetime.
Yeah, I hope so.
It'll definitely be in my lifetime, because I'm going to live to be 300 years old.
And you're also so much younger than me. So, overall, Paul.
Overall, Paul. My nickname.
Overall, Paul. Over Paul. I mean, we talked very negatively about this Declaration of Animal Rights, but I think we were maybe not so negative about the actual NARD ceremony.
Yeah, I'm not. I do not. Again, I think we are quick to judge the effectiveness of something when that is indeed something that is hard to quantify. But I'm not sure how effective it would be. I think it would affect. It would be effective to some passerbyers, but I do not believe, I don't really see a lot of negatives with it. So, like, I'm not going to give it the bearded stamp of approval, but I'm also not going to give it the bearded stamp of disapproval.
My opinion is that this is something that should be relegated to private settings.
I will.
Or more private. Because I think that this is very performative. It's almost like ally theater in some way, you know, as much as that can be applied to animal rights in this situation. I think that there could be great value from coming together with your animal rights advocates and feeling the weight of the world on you and going through something of a grieving process. But my gut instinct is that going through that grieving process in public in the way that it's being done, especially with actual dead animals that people are going to view as really a truly bizarre thing to do. For me, I feel that it would be more productive for that to be done in private.
I think if I were to participate in something like this and that was in public, it would be with signs and not real animals. And also I would want to make sure that people are on the outskirts, like, you know, handing out pamphlets and stuff, because it'd be so easy, because there are people, like you can see in some of the shots, people like forming a circle of the crowd around the thing that's going on. It'd be so easy to just walk around that circle and hand out pamphlets, or have a booth and invite people over to talk to people, or just, like, you know, infiltrate the crowds and talk to people and be like, wow, that's really sad, I'm gonna go vegan now. And, you know, a plant in the audience.
In that exact tone.
A literal plant in the vegan. Not a literal plant, I guess. But so I think if I were going to.
A metaphorical plant?
A metaphorical plant, yes. So if I were going to do it, which I don't think that would be, that's not something that I'd be like, I will never do something like this. But if I were to do it, like I said, it would be signs, not animals. And I would definitely be, want someone to either pass out information or have a booth.
Yeah, I would say fair enough on that. And I guess the way that perhaps, Paul, you could look at it as being counterproductive is that, you know, when you choose to do one thing, that means you're choosing not to do the million other things that you could do.
Yeah.
And so it does make me wonder, like, what if these 50 people got together and went out and talked to people or did pay-per-view or even did leafleting? And what if all the time that was spent organizing this and promoting it was spent on something that we look to be a little more effective?
But this is one day. And I know, like, there are obviously days going into it preparing for it. But it's really just one day. This is not something that, you know, this is not something that people are going out every single day and doing, or like every single week and doing, which I do see people doing stuff like that. So I think that it's not, you know, you could say that about, like, I sat down and played video games for 5 hours today. You could say, hey, Paul, you should have been doing something else with that time, you know? So I think
1 hour for every tofu pup.
So I don't think the fact that this is like an event that happens once a year, and there are going to be organizers working on it for more than one day a year. But I think a lot of those people probably just like show up that day, do the dang thing, and then go home. So it's like, I don't think that's a strong criticism against it.
Fair enough.
Don't argue with me, Andy.
It is a dangerous game to play because there's always more that somebody could do.
Yeah.
Like you said. But we got to take that self-care time out, play some video games.
Exactly. Play some video games, eat some tofu puffs.
With lots of ketchup.
So I think that about wraps it up. Of course, if you have any opinions on this, if you've been in this event before and want to tell us what your experience is, that'd be awesome. You can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com or hitting us up on the Facebook or the Instagram at thebeardedvegans.
You know, Paul, I feel like at this point we might also sprinkle in a request to have people leave us an iTunes review. But we just hit 69 reviews, and I think that unless people really want to go for it and get us up to 311 reviews, it's time to leave them alone.
And then subsequently 420 reviews.
And then 666.
Yeah, and then no more reviews after that.
That's it. All right, so yeah, everyone go write a review.
Everyone.
Get us up there. We did finally retain our five-star status.
Yes.
So thank you to everyone that helped us out with that.
Our FSS, our five-star status. So Andy, do you got any cool events coming up? I know I just had a great time at New York Vegan Street Fair.
Yes, you did. This coming weekend, June 17th, I'll be at the Tri-State Veg Fest in Edison, New Jersey. And then June 18th, going overnight to the Vegan Market at the Market Hotel in Brooklyn, New York. So nice doubleheader right there. Weekend after that, June 24th, Richmond Veg Fest in Richmond, Virginia. June 25th, Vegan Pop-Up in Morristown, New Jersey, presented by the New Jersey Veg Fest.
Nice.
So that's so many events in two weekends. July 5th through the 9th, I'll be at Vegetarian Summerfest in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And you can find all of those dates, deets, and links at CompassionCo.com, as well as a bunch more events. I just confirmed a bunch up through November to this point. So
cool.
So go to CompassionCo.com and check those out.
All right, cool.
Paul.
Yes, Andy.
Do you have a declaration for the end of this show?
How many words should that declaration be?
I would guess there should be 7 points, and each point would be one word.
Few times I've been around that track. That's 7 words. I spent so long counting those words. We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off. Hey! Is this symbolic? Hey! Is it symbolic? Hey! Is this symbolic? Hey! Is it symbolic? We'll be right back. I'm assuming you were still going to use that song as the outro.
Quick follow-up. So last week, episode 83, we were talking about the whole video that was like, we should advocate that people eat chicken. We're doing a... Here we go.
The Bearded Vegans, the good, the bad, and the ugly of vegan advocacy. And now let's move on into the news. That was like a star wipe, like a visual star wipe. That was my audio wipe. In related news, the New York Blood Center also realized that they had the most brutally metal name of all time.
New York Blood Center?
The New York Blood Center.
Not as brutal as one of the affiliate links on the NARD page, or on the like Our Earth, Our Planet, Theirs Too page. There's a photography page called Unparalleled Suffering.
Oh, God. See Unparalleled Suffering play on Friday at the New York Blood Center. Were you going to say something, Andy?
Does it remind you of a certain film?
Unity? I already said that.
Yep. Wait, did you?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Andy, are you playing with your fidget spinner? Yeah, so I don't... I just don't think that that's going to be the type of attitude that... I hate you, Andy. In which they are healthy and safe.
Although, actually, Paul, the Cleveland Veg Fest, a few days after the event, posted on their Facebook page... Can you hear beeping right now?
No.
Okay. Someone's backing up somewhere.
Andy, I'm sure someone is always backing up somewhere.
And now we can put that backing up song for the outro.
oh, yeah.
But really, I'm going to edit all that out. And I did not personally go because you and I were recording, Paul, for something to be named later.
Oh,